When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
August is almost over, and that means the Kinda Funny Patreon pledge drive is about to wrap up. If you love what we do, please know we couldn't do it without your support on patreon.com/kindafunny, and it would mean the world to us if you tossed us a sub, even if it was just for a month.
What's up and welcome back to another Kind of Funny screencast breakdown. This time we are doing episode 1 and 2 of Ahsoka on Disney Plus. We will be doing this each and every week for the next 6 weeks, 8 episodes total of this season. Of course, I am Tim Geddes. I'm joined by the sad boy himself.
For the Empire!
Yes, I expected something from you. Didn't expect that, but that was awesome. Of course, it's Star Wars, so we had to get the Star Wars crew back together. Joining us today is Sage Ryan.
Hello, it's good to see you all.
And Anthony Carboni.
Tim, I can fix her. And when I say her, I mean every single one of them.
Yes, yes, there is a lot of them to talk about here. Ahsoka is not the only one. Like I was saying, this is the Kind of Funny screencast. You can get it on youtube.com/kindoffunny each and every week. You can also get it on roosterteeth.com if you want to get it as a podcast. Search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny screencast, and we'll be right there for you. We're doing Ahsoka week to week. Then after that, we'll be doing Loki week to week. We might get some The Boys Gen V in there somewhere, because that's dropping in September.
Is that the animated thing?
No, that's the spinoff show, the more X-Men kids in school trying to be superheroes thing.
Jesus, there's too many things
going on. But what we're talking about today...
What a time to be alive.
Oh, what a time. We're talking Star Wars, though. We're doing that thanks to your support on patreon.com/kindoffunny. You can go there to get the shows ad-free. You get a whole bunch of bonus content, and you can be a Patreon producer like Jedi Master Deadpool, James Hastings, Casey Andrew, Logan Delaney, Nathan Lamoth, and Patrick Delgado have done. Today we're brought to you by BetterHelp. We'll tell you about that later, because we got to get right into it. I just need y'all to know, it's taken me many years.
Yeah, years, Tim.
Years. But as of a couple days ago, I have finished Star Wars Rebels from beginning to end.
Yes.
I have seen the lights.
Excellent series.
It is utterly fantastic. It only gets better. Season 4 was pitch perfect. Mm. I could not be more hyped going into Ahsoka here. But
yeah.
I want to hold off on my thoughts to the very end here. Barrett, I want to start with you. What did you think of episode 1 and 2 of Ahsoka?
So I naturally very, like, not worried, but going into this and thinking about Ahsoka for the last couple of months, I've had my reservations, right? You know, Mando season 3 being the most recent thing to come out. That was a whole roller coaster where you can check out our weekly reviews of that, where we just... weren't sure where we were headed. We had Obi-Wan, we had Book of Boba Fett, all of these just like, what are we doing here? What's going on? And like 2 minutes into this first episode, I was like, oh, we're back. Star Wars is fucking back. And not like the, you know, like, and I'm not saying like Andor wasn't like a peak thing, but just like the pure heart of Star Wars, it's fucking back. And I absolutely adored these first two episodes. Yeah. You know, the kind of rumblings we're saying and like the internal stuff that had kind of come out of like, this is just Rebels season 5. At least with these first two episodes, that's what it feels like. We're kind of coming right off of like the end of the finale of Rebels, where we got like in episode 2, a slight recreation of like the final scene of Rebels, which is really good. And I feel like outside of some performance stuff. I feel like the writing, the action, all of that has not missed a beat from what Rebels was, and translating it into a live action thing. Obviously, there's going to be a couple of hiccups, but I think the heart is still there, which is impressive because it's been 5 years since Rebels ended. And yeah, I just really adored it. And there's a lot to talk about here.
Sage, what about you?
I mean, we started off with an opening crawl on a Star Wars television show. We got an actual crawl at the beginning of a Star Wars show, which to me said, sit down, bitches, it's Star Wars. And I was very, very into that. Obviously, they opened up strong. They were like, hey, Thrawn's coming. Ahsoka's here. We love this for you. I think that it's a really wonderful cast. I mean, for me personally, I was absolutely sitting there the whole time being like, can you believe this many women are talking to each other in a Star Wars project? Like, that, this many women simply interacting with each other in Star Wars?
That's something that's crazy, too. Of like, we kind of knew because of the events of Rebels of, like, this show was going to be more focused on, like, the female parts of, like, the team from Rebels. And it was just, like, it kind of dawned on me in that first episode of, like, all right, Ezra's gone. Kanan's dead. Zeb is being a space cop somewhere. It's like, holy shit, man. Sorry.
We've never seen anything like this. It was really, really magical to watch. I think that the characters that they've set up are very, very interesting. Welcome Mary Elizabeth Winstead to Star Wars.
Yeah.
I would kiss Mary Elizabeth Winstead in every universe.
So would Obi-Wan.
I know. And it's got to be a hell of a flex to be like, oh, yes, we're both in Star Wars.
As Obi-Wan and Hera.
Characters in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of their acting choices, I think, are so funny. You can tell that they're very similar people. Like, particularly when Hera's talking to Chopper, I was like, you're talking to Chopper like Obi-Wan. Like Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan talks to a droid. And I love it.
Yeah, Sage, anything else?
Yeah, I think that it was an incredibly strong start to it that felt, you know, like we have our genres that we're accomplishing. We've gotten past the point of Star Wars being a genre in the same way we've talked about with Marvel, where now within Star Wars, all of these different genres exist. It's not inherently one thing. And obviously they're taking a lot of inspiration from that like classic samurai movie aesthetic for Ahsoka that I think is really, really interesting and obviously has like existed and influenced for Star Wars for a long time. But they've leaned into that with her character in particular, which is like an interesting contrast to the like cowboy gunslinger of the Mandalorian. So I'm excited to see them get into more of that. I wish the opening fight had come out like punch you in the face strong, but I think that they like eased into like a power and control with it that I'm very excited to see where it goes. And I think I think it's a really strong start. I'm excited. It felt like Star Wars.
Carboni.
Yeah, it's a good show, Tim.
It is. It is.
Here's the thing, Tim. It's good show. The performances are good. Like Barrett's saying, there's Star Wars house style, and then there's kind of this new style that everybody's loving from Andor. This is very much Star Wars house style, but it's done in a very, very wonderful way, and it's very cool to see Dave at basically the height of his skill now. And I don't just, and you know, he's always been a brilliant creator, but working with Jon Favreau and Rick Famuyiwa and all of these Deborah Ann Chow, all of these like great directors, you can tell one of the great things about Dave is he knows what he's good at and he knows where he wants to be good. And I think he went into this Disney live action TV thing saying, okay, show me everything, get me there. And the dialogue is way better than his dialogue was for animated stuff. It feels more natural. His shot lists are more natural. The story feels more natural. This is a very, very good Star Wars project. I am super into it so far.
I am so shocked at how much I loved these two episodes. Like, watching Rebels, I was so in, loved the characters, was excited to see him in live action. These first two episodes wowed the hell out of me. You talking about the Star Wars house style, they nailed it. Like, this feels so authentically classic Star Wars, but with the Filoni kind of wrapping on it that they've earned over the last couple, I mean, many years, decade even, of Clone Wars and Rebels and all that. But just this being this project, Sage talking about opening with the crawl, like it gave a gravitas to it that I felt they lived up to. I really liked the opening action scenes. I feel like they kind of popped in with like a, we're starting with some action, you're gonna see some sabers, you're gonna see droids, you're gonna see star battles, all the shit that you expect from Star Wars, characters that you know, people, like places, planets, all the stuff that we're familiar with, sound cues. It was just like, yo, this is Star Wars. Like, this is exactly what y'all have been asking for, what y'all have wanted, and it's done very well. I'm really into the witchcraft of it all. Like, the Night Sister stuff.
Oh, yeah, we gotta talk about the Night Sisters,
you know,
baby.
I love me a Night Sister. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
He can fix her. Marin. He can fix her.
But I love... taking the character, what was her name, Morgan from Mando season 2 that we saw introduced in the episode that introduced Ahsoka into live action and introduced the concept of her looking for Thrawn in the live action world, at least, and kind of setting up where we're at here. Giving her this new backstory that's not so much just the samurai vibe that they gave in that episode, but more the mystical witch side, I thought was very layered.
She's a business witch, Tim.
I know, which is even cooler.
She's a captain of industry, Tim. She is running shipyards on Corellia, the fucking central hub of galactic starship supply. She is buying and selling super star destroyers. And she's a goth girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah. It's all of it combined.
She does it all.
And what I love so much is the dynamic between Hera, Ahsoka, and Sabine is just being so well portrayed of, like, Hera just trying to, like, get them to communicate the way that she knows that they can, the way that she needs them to.
And the way that she would for the Ghost crew 100%. During Rebels. Yeah.
I thought that was so great. But Sabine, this is, being the surprise kind of lead of the show, I love. I think that she is doing such a great job, being so well translated to live action. And the scene of her on the speeder with the Star Wars rock music playing, I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is what I've wanted. It is hype as hell. And it feels authentic to her character in a way that I just did not expect.
It wasn't a Space Vespa scene, you know?
Yeah, it was not at all.
No, it wasn't. I love, number one, in-galaxy Star Wars genre music. Not like traditional cantina, like, hey, this is what we play on this planet. And like, no, this is top 40 radio rock that you listen to when you're an angry youth on Lothal.
She's so angry.
It had that, like, the Star Trek reboot with Kirk.
Yes,
you know, 100%.
And this isn't the only moment. Like, there's a lot of Star Trek in this, like the first episode in particular. There's a lot of Phantom Menace in
this.
There's
so much Phantom Menace, baby.
So much Phantom Menace. Yo, when we introduce our nameless
Baylan and his Padawan, yeah.
Yeah.
With the little
when we
braid.
Introduce the nameless Padawan, and she goes to Lothal and has a full on Maul scene.
Yes, it's so good. I mean, dude, even the opening scenes, though, where we first see them, right? Where we have them coming out of the ship. It's the most Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon.
Yeah, that's like where they come on. And even like the way Baylan presents himself, where it's like not full on Sith. Like all of my notes, I'm like, I don't want to refer to them as Sith. I'm
the orange sabers.
No. Force
right?
users.
I have the same kind of notes of like, okay, well, we understand what the structure of the Sith is. And we know that this isn't like what we know to be like a traditional Sith Lord and apprentice. Mm-hmm. So like,
yeah, because he's treating her like a Jedi Padawan.
Right.
So when Rey described the character of Baylan to me at Celebration, and by the way, fucking the first episode being dedicated to the late great Ray Stevenson, who I don't know how this series ends, but I'll tell you this, however it ends, the galaxy is emptier without Baylan and Ray continuing on in it, because already in these two episodes with not tons to do, Ray has done so much.
Oh yeah.
So Ray described the character of Baylan as a knight of the round table at Camelot. And I thought that was very interesting, because when you think about those knights, the only thing they had in common was they were knights of the round table. They were not all good dudes. Mm. They followed a very specific, like, honestly, an order. They followed a code of conduct, but above and beyond that code of conduct, there was no telling whether they were going to be good or evil in any given moment, right? That's a knight just has to obey the laws of chivalry. Mm-hmm. To Balin, he just has to do what he considers to be right for. Does he consider himself a Jedi? He says no in the beginning, but he clearly is following some sort of order. And I don't think it's Sith. I don't see them as Sith. I see his Padawan as more Sith than him for sure.
Yeah, that's like a on the path to being a Sith.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
And that like desire for more power, because I mean that's the thing that he promises her throughout. Yep. This is like, you know, hey, well, what happens when we find Thrawn and it's more power? And the look on her face is like, oh, that's a Sith.
I want
this guy kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Her, on the other hand,
even his moment of oh, it'll be a shame to kill her. There are so few Jedi left. And he means it honestly. Like the way he delivers the line, it's not that like I'm curling my lip.
Yeah, I'm not
I'm saying it like an inquisitor.
I'm not Sheev right now. Like
yeah. No, I genuinely mean it. It's very sad. I don't consider myself a Jedi anymore. I think of it kind of like it's going to be a very interesting parallel to Ahsoka's journey, I think, which I love.
Yeah.
Ahsoka had that whole denial of the Jedi Order thing about her for so long, which, by the way, back to gray robes, interesting. The removal of, you know, so that thing of like
of
she wasn't part of the
she kind of wears a blanket,
you know, she kind of wears a blanket. Hat,
she doesn't consider herself a Jedi, but she still respects the Jedi Order. She still loves them. She loves all the people that are in the Jedi Order. And I kind of see Balin as sort of a more dark side version of that, you know?
I agree with you on the parallel of that, because I think that when we picture gray Jedi, we still picture good guys. Mm-hmm. We picture that like, well, you're not part of the Jedi Order, but like, you know, we don't see neutral as being ever bad, which is not
true. No, we see it as
like,
a way.
Neutrality is very dangerous and harmful in a world that is like fascist war territory. So with that in mind, if you're at that like I'm neutral, I just serve whatever serves me in the moment, like maybe that is an introduction of what we consider like a gray Jedi.
We even
gray
get that Jedi from Ahsoka,
usually,
right? In this episode of her like them being like, how'd you get this information out of her? And she was like, it wasn't through Jedi ways. And it's like, oh dang, that's it is putting everybody in a very interesting place in this post Jedi world after the fall of the Empire. Like it's pretty cool.
We don't keep talking about this.
But real quick, let's take a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. We all know life can be hard. It's so easy to get caught up in what everyone else needs from you and never take a moment to think about what you need from yourself. I know from experience how often it just seems easier to care about others and keep it moving. But when we spend all of our time giving, it can leave us feeling stretched thin and burned out. Therapy can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. Some of my best friends use BetterHelp and love how helpful it can be for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. For more balance with BetterHelp, visit betterhelp.com/kindoffunny today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/kindoffunny. BetterHelp.com/kindoffunny.
And now that we're back, I just want to say how much I appreciate this compared to some of the other shows for its focus and simpleness so far and getting right into the action, where we're two episodes in and I feel like we have a great idea of where the season's going and I'm excited for it. I feel like they've been delivering a lot of the on the promise of getting these characters together and having the quest be from both good guys and bad guys, if you want to look at it that way, perspective of getting to Ezra, getting to Thrawn, that's actually the same destination, I think really presents a compelling arc to this season.
I had a really big fear, which is why I started laughing, of like, we have a clear path of like what this entire season is going to be. And I felt like we had that at the beginning of Mando season 3. But Tim, what if next episode we're hanging back out with Jack Black and Lizzo, man? Like, what if that's our destination next
Fingers
week?
Crossed.
Oh, Fingers shit. Crossed.
First of all, we respect the Jack Black and Lizzo episode in this house. At least two of us do.
Show a little bit of respect.
show a little bit of respect for the buddy cop episode that we deserved.
I respect that episode for some of the droid stuff they almost committed to and then just didn't. So
See, yeah. I feel the exact opposite. I think the droid part of that is literally one of the worst things they've ever done.
We cannot do this. Listen, here's what I'm going to say. We do have this clear path. And I think one of the reasons we have this clear path is, you know, unlike some of these other shows or some of these other projects, this is the project that this is the story and the ending of the story that Dave has been thinking of for almost two decades. So I think that's very interesting. And I think that's why we are less likely to deviate here.
And I think it's important,
some of these other shows.
It's important to point out, not only is it the culmination of everything he's been working on, it is also the very clear canon core setup piece to this Heir to the Empire storyline they're talking about with the movies and the follow-up project.
Yeah, so, like the fact that this got like a crawl, like just to go back to that really quick, but it wasn't like the official like movie crawl, but it was still something to be like, hey, this is important. We need to give some backstory here. And it's going to be wild to see if like they do Heir to the Empire as like a movie of getting that full crawl and all that stuff. I feel
red
like
red crawl,
to the,
no slant,
straight
red logo.
Yeah, a lot of red in this. Yeah, whole lot of red. A surprising amount of red for them having orange lightsabers. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, okay, cool. They're building something.
I was going to say the ending, everything that they're doing. The ending of like even when they show the star map during the credits, that's Urkatot. That's not, you know, Arabesh. That's the Sith language.
Cool as
that's
hell.
Urkatot is the Sith alphabet that was designed by Ralph McQuarrie. And like they're doing some things that are very, very huge here when you talk about Heir to the Empire and the Thrawn Ascendant kind of stuff. First of all, that thing that she is building, the Eye of Sion, that's Outbound Flight. That's from the Timothy Zahn book. That thing looks exactly like Outbound Flight.
That's cool as hell.
Because what did I have in my notes?
That is intergalaxy travel in Star Wars. Yeah. That's the first thing that she says, that Elspeth says, Morgan says when she puts that down. She's like, this was made by extra galactic beings. We've got aliens in our aliens, dog. I heard you like aliens.
My notes were, they're building a huge version of the hyperspace jump rings for the Jedi used during the Clone
Wars. Exactly. Yeah. That's what it looked like, which is such a cool concept. And then getting to...
In the book, in Outer Flight, it's talked about that way.
It's so cool.
Because that book is set during the Attack of the Clones.
Interesting. When they're on Corellia, and like they're like, "What is that? A hyperdrive?" Like,
hyperdrive core. And I love that Hera's like, "I'm a general. We're not building anything that big."
It's awesome.
So good.
Yeah, and especially in a post Death Star world, post Death Star 2 world.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
For them to be talking about that, like we're just in a really cool place. And I love again the concept of the witchcraft versus the Force. Where it's Jedi, Sith, are these two new people either of those? Are they something different? Even getting the final shots, I think, of episode 2, where we had Morgan doing the holograms. The holograms looked different. They had this the green vibe to it. I just like that they're introducing these other elements while also introducing the concept of other galaxies. Like now that I've watched Rebels and I can understand the world between worlds and all that stuff. Yeah. Them playing with
also space whales.
With time. The whales are there. You know, we saw them in this a little bit. But
so many purgles.
I love the idea of Star Wars. Literally, the very first thing ever in Star Wars is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Right?
There's other galaxies, baby.
There's other galaxies and there's other times. And I feel like what we see in these first two episodes of them kind of getting the key, the map, all the stuff, the amount of times they're literally showing the two galaxies and talking about that, while we also know that when they find Ezra, there's going to be time travel shenanigans at play. There's some interesting stuff going on, man. Filoni is like really, he's been setting up, playing the long game to be able to do some shit.
Yeah, they even say like Thrawn is talking to Morgan like through time and space, which I find very interesting because as far as my understanding of the space whales, they just traveled through space. So I'm interested to see how they incorporate all the time stuff in there. What was the other thing?
They're the Star Wars versions of the tortoises from Finding Nemo, really. They just sort of ride the vibes from place to place. But I love that when Morgan's map had like tons of purgles around the edges of it. Love it. Like they really, really got into that stuff. And Thrawn talking through time and space. you know, all of this stuff is being shown as magic, and Morgan's magic is that green Night Sister magic. It's not the blue or the red magic. Mm-hmm. It's not force magic. I think Thrawn is probably just using his big old brain and whatever's around him on that planet. Like, I don't think it has much to do with magic. It's just right. Like, oh, is this how you communicate? Let's go.
See,
I need to get a message out.
My theory, and again, I'm way newer to this Rebel stuff. I've only seen it once. So it's like, you listen to podcasts and all this shit.
Yep.
But the World Between Worlds stuff, like when Ezra grabs Ahsoka from the past and like saves her from Vader and all that stuff, like my gut tells me the easiest answer is, that's how Thrawn's communicating. Somehow they that's where they are, and like they're using those portals. But I know it's different from where the whales took them, but we don't know where the whales took them.
Yeah, we don't really know. We do know that Thrawn, even in this new canon, I forget if it's the same in like the old canon when he was originally introduced, he's from wild space. Like he's from like a part of the galaxy that's not established by the Old Republic or the Empire or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see if we get any of the, how do you say, is it the Chiss? I forget how to say the Chiss.
Chiss Ascendancy.
So it'll be interesting to see if like they pull any of that stuff up since like they're in a different galaxy and not part of like the same territory where the Republic is.
I just think that they have a lot of room here to interpret magic, because when you exist in between the two like largest canon events in Star Wars, when you sit in between the rise of that and you have kind of like the loss of all order, there is simply magic that exists within the galaxy that is open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. And like showing things like the Night Sisters, this like Sith's not Sith, this witch, this very different interpretations of what is like the magic of the Force, and in the way that we've interpreted like the Way and all of these things throughout time. I didn't expect Ahsoka to be a series, and I don't know why I didn't, considering Ahsoka is literally like a representation now of the light side of the Force, of like such a deep exploration of what is in between not only time events, but like the sides of the Force, the sides of the stories. Star Wars kicks off as good guys, bad guys. And then all of this like extended universe, all of these books that have explored everything in between. It's really cool when you think about like what place each show serves and like what they are showing us and what their like place is to expand the world a little bit, especially in like putting things back into canon.
Yeah.
I think that like Ahsoka's place is that. And that's why there's all this like, we don't really, this guy is, and we don't really know where this magic is or how this works.
Yeah.
I anticipate them spending the time of this show to show us what else the Force can be other than Jedis and Sith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we talked about that a little bit, where we talked about, you know, it'd be super weird for Cassian Andor to hang out with a Jedi all the time. That's not his part of Star Wars.
Right.
You know what I mean? And as much as Din Djarin hangs out with Jedi, it's kind of like, okay, space magic, I can deal with that, but it's not my thing all the time, right? I love this as a continuation of really these sort of themes like you're talking about, which is okay, this magic has been shown as light and dark for so long, and that's the way we always thought of it because we were always in this big war, but does it have to mean that? And one of the things that I loved is the talk of the Night Sister Temple, which has a very Zepho look to it. Like there was some good like Jedi Fallen Order game.
Oh my
like,
God.
Yeah. Dude, shares.
So Ahsoka was literally doing a puzzle from the game.
I thought about you, dude. I thought about you when you're always talking about Star Wars ass video game.
Star Wars
shit.
Video game.
Like, this is it.
Yep.
Straight up.
But one of the things that, that leads Sabine to kind of figuring out this key is seeing like the three faces, right? Is seeing like, oh, this is a Night Sister thing. This is three faces. This is three gods. Like we're thinking about Mortis. We're thinking about, you know, these sort of deep things that Dave put in that are like, and you know, the rest of the Clone Wars and Rebels team put in that are like, oh, there's a bigger magic here. And there's a much spookier thing going on. And I think the idea of introducing that there's bigger power here and there's more to the organizational units that we've already seen is going to be so cool when some freaking extra dimensional beings show up in Star Wars that don't care about Jedi or Sith or any of, they've never heard of this stuff. They don't care about it. Mm. It's not their culture. It's not their thing. Although I am very interested in figuring out if it's connected deeply to the Sith in some way because of what they're showing us with these star maps.
Well, so that's what I think is the most interesting is the placement of this show and how Rebels ends in particular, because, you know, Star Wars starting as this good and evil thing where there is an empire and there is a small group of people trying to take it down. The Star Wars Rebels show is entirely about that group yep. that is taking it down, that small group, and seeing how big it can get. But the fact that Rebels season 4 ends with the time jump, yep. right, to a post-Jedi world of them taking down the Empire, and then this show just starts essentially at that same time. We mm-hmm. have so many years of not knowing exactly what happened, and I love the mystery of it, how they yep. presented it so far, of Sabine being Ahsoka's apprentice. Come the fuck on. Is there anything cooler than yeah. us not knowing all the details right now? Like, it just feels so exciting. And then placing this to Sage point of kind of like the mysticism of it all and how it relates and how it might change things, like looking forward to knowing that the First Order is going to rise. All of the shows so far we've seen in this era mm-hmm. of the Mando season 1-3, Book of Boba Fett, all of that have dealt with us seeing the formation and the incompetencies of the New Republic
yeah.
and how they're just a fucking bunch of bozos. Like, just because the yeah. good guys are in control, like, they're really, really bad at it. And I feel like this episode continues to show that with Corellia and how it was treated and kind of like being ran by bad people. But applying all these things together, answering the questions of filling in the gap of what happened between Rebels and here between Hera, Ahsoka, and Sabine, but then getting forward to the Thrawn stuff and answering the questions of the cloning and Snoke and how the fuck did Palpatine get thousands of Star Destroyers with Death Star weapons and all that shit. Like, I feel like they're really setting the seeds for something that I'm like, huh? They might actually explain this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to say, go on, Barrett.
Just to loop back to the stuff that we've been seeing through Mando and like kind of my frustrations of kind of showcasing the New Republic and how the current failings that they're having as like a new galactic kind of government system, right? My frustration in the past has been like, we've seen it, but it's always felt like kind of the background, say for like the one episode of Mando where it's like very clear of like one of Thrawn's pawns that we call them, where she's like kind of obviously working for him and like doing a mm-hmm. lot of stuff for him and Gideon.
Right.
The
rehabilitation program.
Just the quick exchange with the dude from House MD. Who's
shout out to Peter Jacobson.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see him, and I was really excited that he got like a little seed here. That was really cool. Even like before we get the kind of like reveal that he's a part of like the secret empire organization, they really took over this part of the shipyard to get things out over to Cetos, which is the planet that they're doing the star map stuff from, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like there's some truth, even though he's not really New Republic, he's secretly Empire, there's still some truth where he talks about, yeah, ex-Imperials are still working here. The New Republic continues, he says essentially along the lines of like,
You'll still find ex-Imperials at every level of the New Republic government.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, we don't see them as like, and they question him about loyalty. He's like, no, they're just people. They're just looking to get paid. Like, their loyalty is in their wallet and stuff like that. And the New Republic continues to fail as the Empire did in understanding personal loyalties. They see workers as tools and not as people.
Once again, no parallel to the real world.
Can I ruin this for everyone?
And we talked about this in Mando. I mentioned this in Mando. I believe I think you know they've done with this with Rebels, all of Clone Wars, and the prequel stuff of you know, bringing up like real world things, and even Andor being the most obvious recent example. But with Mando, of what they've been teasing, and now a little bit more clearly here of like kind of using the kind of like era of quote unquote fake peace or whatever of like mm-hmm. civility, I'll say quote unquote, from like 2008 to 2014, right? Mm-hmm. And then see and kind of like nitpicking that and being like, yeah, but y'all didn't really solve shit, and this is why things yeah. that are on a more fascist side can easily just take over y'all when y'all think y'all conquered the galaxy.
You want the Starship factories to close down? Nobody wants that. My investors don't want that. We got to think of the economy. Yep. Go
Guys,
ahead, Sage.
I think that Peter Jacobson was really good. He was really great. Did it have to be the Jewish guy?
He was Jew-coded.
He's a Jewish actor.
I'm going to tell you, he's Jew-coded, that character.
And they really were like, it's not loyalty. It's greed. He's just in it. And he's like, he pops up in his line is like, look, I'm just in it for my investors. And I was like, fuck, man.
Yeah, not great.
Of all people, did it have to be him?
Yeah. He was Jew-coded. And here's my other thing. Although people, okay, they go into his red control room full of his literal protocol droids that are painted like
red
Imperial Guard, and I'm just like, here it comes, here yep. it comes. I didn't think he needed to turn out to be specifically an Empire sympathizer.
I thought it was just the two dudes who like obviously looked shady, and they're like kind of working
greedy.
On this.
Greedy.
Yeah,
that's the thing is when they were carrying him away in handcuffs, I was like, I want them to be specific here. Because I don't want them to say that every bad guy here is secretly an Empire sympathizer. Right. Like, I don't want them to. I want them to say, because, you know, Rian Johnson got close to this in The Last Jedi. And I feel like they've gotten close to this a few times where it's like, hey, you don't have to be part of the evil empire to want to make money off of war.
Yep.
And those people are bad, too. And we need to talk about how those people fit into things. And so I didn't want necessarily Weaver, his character's name was Min Weaver. I didn't want him to necessarily turn out to be like, hail the empire or whatever.
Right.
I just wanted a little clarity when they were like moving him away. I was like, tell me what he did. Tell me exactly what he did. I mean, he did put HK protocol droids, like HK assassin droids.
Like, nah, haven't seen any. And that other droid's like, yo, I saw one of them motherfuckers.
That droid was a fucking narc, man.
I would like to do ditch it straight away.
That droid's a comrade. What are you talking about, a narc? droid rules.
Thank you. Some of the assassin droids and stuff in these episodes, though, were so badass.
Dude, I loved.
The HKs are so good. Shout out to all the KOTOR stuff.
Dude, when Ahsoka pops up for the first time from the cave and like we first
her
see
Bugs
one of them
Bunny hole.
And it's just the amount of Bugs Bunny stuff was hilarious, but just that the droid just standing there not moving and just the cape kind of like floating, I was like, this is cool as hell. And
then she
heard the samurai stuff.
By it, I was like, man, this is just such a great, like, the fact that we had as many action scenes as we did already, and like, sure, I don't think any of them are going to go down as my favorites of all time, but I feel like they there was a nice pace to them and a variety of them that I was like so into it. But seeing the Ahsoka scene with the droids and the sabers and all that, but after we had seen the Rey scene of him essentially doing the Rogue One, Vader down the hallway, Luke down the hallway, hallway stuff. But going back to what we're talking about of like, they're Sith, but they're not Sith. They're very clearly not Sith, but it's whatever. The music playing is like very reminiscent of the Imperial March, but it's more just dissonant piano chords that's playing as he's like going through. And I just love that it's like,
I noticed that
it's close, but not quite.
It's disconnected.
Just like, it's disconnected, man. Yeah. It's very,
and
very
they
cool.
They do a lot of very, everything was one note off from like classic fanfares. Yep. They would get very close and then end with a different chord. And I'd be like, ooh.
And to bring it back.
Yeah, giving a dissonance. To
bring it back to the whole like Baylan and Ahsoka kind of being interesting mirrors to another who are not maybe fully dedicated to either being Jedi or Sith. I do wonder maybe with the introduction of, you know, Force users that aren't even about that, I wonder if that's the kind of driving wedge that makes them both dedicate more to the things that they're coded to but not fully committed to yet. Like, I wonder if we get, you know, Ahsoka's whole thing is, you know, I'm no Jedi for the longest time, right? And I wonder if we finally kind of get that, like, all right, I'm back. This is what the Jedi are supposed to be. And along with Baylan, who I'm convinced, especially because it's not just his Padawan. He's got other people who are using the Inquisitor lightsabers also working for him. We had that Morok scene on the...
Marok
on Corellia, which was awesome, with a very interesting looking mask, where I'm like convinced that Baylan, and maybe not Baylan himself, or maybe his Padawan or whatever, I don't know fully from like the comics of what the actual origins are, but like, they're Knights of Ren coded, man. Like, they have to be like the kind of founding parts of it.
Full on medieval armor.
Yeah.
on Merok, and not even just medieval armor. You know, you want to go back to those like good use of capes in this series. Wide, that very wide Kurosawa shot where they're about to fight, and because he's a knight, he sends his squire out first.
But he uses the cape as like the thing to like, all right, go.
He unclips his cape and it floats.
So sick.
And then not just that, but our the Padawan, who, God, she has a name in the credits, but we haven't heard it in the show.
Should we just say she looks dope as all fuck?
Yeah. Like, she was dope as all fuck. And when she's fighting Sabine, she uses her cape just to fuck with her.
Yeah.
She used like throwing it in her face and like making it so she can't see and just using it to annoy her opponent. I'm like, there is so much good cape work in this show.
Yeah. But not Ahsoka's. I'm sorry. Again, I think she's wearing a blanket.
Yeah, it's a fair criticism.
She's wearing one of those like infinity scarves.
It's a terry cloth bathrobe, dude.
And here's like, the thing.
She got interrupted in the middle of watching Grey's Anatomy.
And here's the thing is like, you know, there's a continuity error here a little bit because they want to dedicate to like kind of resetting her a little bit and being not fully dedicated to like one side of the force here.
Gray robes.
The end of Rebels, she's wearing like the sick white cloak with the big staff. And then we get that scene in episode two and she doesn't have any of that. It's like, I get what you're setting up here. And I know it makes less sense now in this context of what you're doing for the show, but give me the white cloak. Give me the big staff that like, I have no idea what that staff was originally going to be for, but like, come on, man.
You gotta think about it. Like, you know, the different Iron Man armors for different occasions and stuff. She was at a point in her life and now she's had more time to think about it. And she's kind of backed up from that maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
I was a little weirded out by it, but there's some other stuff that was like the costume work. I mean, I want to talk about some of the design here. It was so good. I mean, from our guy Marok to Shin stuff was so cool. Space Grimes looked dope as hell.
Yeah. Yep.
like so amazing. But they did little things with like Sabine, where like when Sabine was not a Mandalorian anymore, when she was a soldier, she had the Republic Navy patch on her jacket. She still was drawing Lothcats all over her stuff, you know? Like there was all this stuff that was still very her. But when like she got her old armor out and got it back, that owl that she had painted on her armor wasn't there anymore. And I think certain things they were just like, certain things are not going to look cool in live action, and certain things are not going to work for this story, and we're just going to get rid of them.
But also really quick, it's the I don't know if that's the symbol for the specific fleet now today, but that is the starboard symbol that she made in Rebels that Hera also still wears. So is that the thing that they adopted now for the Republic?
So there's the starboard, and the starboard has always been like kind of part of the Rebel thing. So it makes sense that she's wearing that if she's been part of the Rebellion for a long time. The one that I was interested in was the yellow circle that has the red ring on the top and bottom that's cut. That's Rebellion Navy, I believe.
Okay.
And so that to me shows like, oh, she kept serving as a soldier for a while. Like we had there are stories of Sabine that we don't know.
I mean,
from
obviously
war, you know, and I love that.
Yeah.
And I love the mirror once again to samurai movies, but also to Kanan when she decides that it's time to fight and become a Padawan again. And she's
sitting and about to cut her hair.
Yeah. A lot of people online were calling it her Mulan moment, and I'm fine with
that. No, it's her Kanan Jarrus moment. Fucking put respect on his name.
I will say the thing I like, Sabine to me, 10 out of 10 in this show so far. I'm so into it.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't like was her getting the lightsaber through her. I like lightsabers to have a little more stakes than this of like, it just felt cheap. It felt unnecessary. And she's back and she's good. And I get it.
She wasn't in a flashback tank for 3 days afterwards.
I know. Where was the flashback? Because then we could have learned what was the driving wedge between Ahsoka and Sabine in the last decade, you know?
Well, I have a bunch of theories on that, in that like Ahsoka could not do what Anakin could not do for her. And like the fear of like whatever image she had seen of like her future and like the warning she had received of like, you cannot remain Anakin's Padawan. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's just a little bit of trauma. And she had that like, I can't stick around. No one sticks
around.
It's,
you know, it's like the, I know Alyssa talks about this, my wife, where it's like, you know, when she's a teacher, she gets a lot of like the crazy kids and she's like, this is punishment, because I was a crazy kid to my mother, where it's like, I think like, because Ahsoka was Snips back in the day for Anakin, it's like, she's getting what, like, the universe is coming back around with when it comes to, with Sabine, so it'll be interesting to see how they try to reattach that relationship.
Yeah, I was interested, at first I was like, because when we watched the trailer together and we were all talking about it, I was like, is she going to be a Jedi? Is she going to be somebody who is literally training as a Jedi, or was the master thing just a dig at her? And I didn't know how I was going to feel about her doing Jedi training. And what I loved is they actually gave a great line to Hu Yang about it. Where, by the way, Hu Yang, I absolutely love, and I love that David Tennant. Daytime Emmy award-winning Hu Yang, who, by the way, in the book Brotherhood, is said to be so old. He's older than Yoda, we know that.
Yeah.
But is said in the book Brotherhood to be so old that he was found thousands and thousands of years ago outside a Jedi temple in a blue box.
Fuck yeah.
I love that. So Hu Yang is talking to Sabine, and she's like, yeah, I mean, I'm no Ezra. And he's like, no, you're not. You're not very good at this. He's
I've
never seen a Padawan as bad as you.
Awesome.
But guess what? You're only wasting your own time. And I love that message of, because we don't get enough of this message in Star Wars, where it's like, you don't have to be the best. You don't have to be great. You're probably not even going to be very good at this. But if it's what you need to do, stop hiding from what you need to do and just go do it.
Star Wars loves a specialist boy story. So to be like, you're not the specialist boy. You're kind of just a guy.
You're just Ken.
Dude.
You're just Ken.
You're just a guy, but there are only like 8 of these lightsabers left, and if you've got one, like,
one of us.
Really quick, I know we're going to be wrapping up in a few minutes here. Shout out to Chopper. They have not missed a beat with Chopper.
Was pure cartoon.
Yeah, that was pure cartoon. Like, they nail it, or, like, you know, it's been talked about before, like, they actually write dialogue for Chopper. And through Dave Filoni's performance, which I assume he's still doing the voice for Chopper in the show, like, you can... It's sometimes very obvious what Chopper is actually saying in, like, basic. So it's just, like, really funny. I loved the back and forth between him and Hera. Shout out to Clancy Brown reprising his role as Ryder Azadi.
Respected, dude.
Like, I was telling Tim before we were recording this, the volume in which I yelled when I noticed it was Clancy Brown. I was like, holy shit, they're bringing back Ryder and it's Clancy Brown. I'm so excited. I can't wait for all the articles. It was like, is Clancy Brown's character in Ahsoka related to the character he played as in Mandalorian season 1, because it's going to make me bash my head against a wall. But then also, shout out to the boy Jaikel, who is now the senator of Lothal.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
That slaps. Just with that little, like, get out there and talk.
Yep.
So good.
And I love his line of just, thank you for that introduction. Fuck. Like, I also want to, as we're wrapping up here, you know, I want to give the deep cuts and call out some things.
Yes.
Here comes your deep cut shit for episode 1 and 2. Number one, a lot of people are going to be asking, are we looking at the Yuuzhan Vong? I do not believe we are looking at the Yuuzhan Vong. Extra dimensional characters that are coming in. They are cut off from magic. They are basically biomechanical. They're like the Borg of Star Wars.
They
were like a big deal in the EU, and everybody's like, is this the Yuuzhan Vong? I don't believe it is the Yuuzhan Vong. However, those star maps look a lot like the star maps that belong to the Rakata from KOTOR. And they looked a lot like the faces that were maybe in those, I don't know, it looked like some of the faces in the temple. So that could be it. I want to give a shout out to Ahsoka's ship, which is a T6 Jedi transport. It's licensed as T61974. That's June 1974, the birth of Dave Filoni. I want to talk about, let's see, what else do I have? I have a bunch of them.
Yeah. There's a lot going on here.
There was a lot because, I mean, obviously the mural uses the actual designs of the characters from Rebels.
Perfect.
That was lovely
so
to see.
Good. That whole scene, like that and the like hair cutting scene in front of it are like a frame by frame.
Yep.
You watch them.
It's beautiful. The HK droids are obviously from KOTOR. Shout out to HK-47, one of the greatest droids ever made. Ahsoka seems to use Sense Echo, like Cal Kestis. Very interesting.
And the scomp stuff of like, normally we see droids kind of do the little like unlocking things, like seeing him use the force to do it in the beginning of the episode, I thought was really cool.
Yes. Yep. Very cool. When our dude, Dr. Tob says all we have are our loader droids. He lists legitimate loaders. The CLL that he lists is the binary load lifter that C-3PO is very proud that he can speak to. The IW-37 is a binary load lifter with a grippy arm, and the HV-7 is a load droid that Dave Filoni loves in particular, that is taken from the old school Wizards of the Coast, no longer canon, Star Wars tabletop RPG.
Yep.
Wow. Oh,
yeah.
Deep cut.
Danab, the planet that they're going to, the Danab system, sorry, that they're going to, that's where Dagobah is. It's also heavily featured in the Star Wars Rebellion game and is mentioned in Star Wars The Old Republic. It's part of the Outer Rim. And the Urkatot, the Sith
language
that they show, Urkatot was designed as a corrupting language. The language itself is dark. It is connected to darkness.
C-3PO is not allowed to say it, you know?
He's not allowed to say it. Yeah. If you read it.
Yeah, okay.
Reading it or speaking it actually will cause you to become more evil just through... It's an evil language. You can't speak it without being evil, the same way my forefathers can't speak Italian without using their hands.
Yeah, yeah. It all adds up.
And I think that is all the... E-Wings.
Yes.
On Lothal, they're not flying X-Wings. They're flying E-Wings for the first time in live action.
I've never seen this shit. That looked cool as hell. Yeah. Love the design of this thing.
This was supposedly the designers of the NCOM systems, the designers of the X-Wing after the war were like, how do we build a better X-Wing? And they actually build an E-Wing. And the R7 droids that they have, those patrol people, are based on the Kenner R2 droid molds.
Yep. Yeah, that's fine.
I was going to say they looked really familiar. My last two things...
And then we got to wrap up.
The suggested show at the end of Ahsoka should not be The Mandalorian. It should be Star Wars Rebels. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking of there. And then my next question, just really quick, is Thrawn the next episode, or are we building up to him slowly?
It's a great question.
He's two eps away.
Ooh, that sounds right. Okay. That sounds right.
I think he's next episode.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sage, what about you?
I'm with Anthony. I think he's a couple more episodes away. I think it's a build-up. We've got an 8-episode season. We're 2 episodes in. I don't think we get him quite yet. I think...
Okay. Oh man, well hell yeah, can't wait to keep talking to y'all every week about this. Let us know in the comments below what you thought of Ahsoka episodes 1 and 2, what theories you have about the show, and until next time, may the force be with you.
I want a Loth cat.
Oh, we didn't even talk about him.
Oh my god. And like, yeah, that's where Ezra lived, right?
Yeah, that's the communications tower where Ezra used to live. Yeah.